that they may not hire any employees. So subsection E is a problem because we would not be willing to contract with people who don't have workers' compensation insurance if they had the authority to hire employees.
Good for you,
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Representative Edmondson.
What if the individual does not have the authority to hire other employees and works alone by themselves? Do they provide their own workers' compensation, or does the city of Portland provide that?
Usually they do not have workers' compensation insurance, and we do not list them as an employee of ours if they're truly an independent contractor. These contracts are of short duration, usually under $10,000, and they're simply not our employees. They're not under our direction and control. We want independent outside people to do especially these consulting things because it requires a degree of independence to look in and assess the situation.
Okay. Representative Mannix.
In regard to this last problem or concern, mm-hmm. What if we change the language? By the way, I've been trying to do this with witnesses who raise particular questions. I'd like to see what we can do to resolve the problem.
Okay.
What if we change the language to say that the individual or business entity providing labor or services has the authority to hire and fire employees to perform the labor or services, or specifically contracts not to carry out such function for a specific contract, something along those lines?
I think that would be fine, and that was one of the things that I would have suggested.
Thank you.
And one other thing, this subsection E also interrelates with 027's definition of sole proprietor and makes an inconsistent exemption there for sole proprietor, because under 029, sole proprietor is defined for workers' compensation purposes as someone who performs the work without the assistance of others, whereas you're adding to it the requirement that they be an independent contractor, which adds the inconsistent sub-requirement that they have the authority to hire and fire employees. So you've created an inconsistency that needs to be worked out. Anyway.
Now, the intent of the interim committee was that if you're an independent contractor, and the key word here, it has authority to hire. That's,
I see.
That's the intent, is that you're a contract, maybe you work by yourself, but in fact, it came up in testimony. You get bogged down, you have to hire somebody for typing, for instance, mm-hmm. that you have the authority to hire an employee. That was the only intent there. No,
Mr.
Chair. Agenda. Representative Hayden.
Couldn't this objection that's presented to us be handled contractually by mandating in the contract that no sub-employees be hired? So we would be out of it.
You want to take that, Lynn?
That's the way that we do it now, and Representative Mannix's amendment would permit that.
Well, that's contract law. And, you know, the relationship between them and a subcontractor is between them. If they're going to sign something like that, that's their business. But Representative Edmonds.
You mentioned Section 029. There, in that section, refers to if a person awards a contract and goes on to discuss the various terms there. Is it your understanding that the city of Portland falls under that category?
That's not clear, but we act as though we do. We perform our relationships as though we fall under it.
Okay, so you don't see any reason to distinguish public employers from private employers in this independent contract?
It wouldn't change our operations.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the clarification on that. We did want to get an answer on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Did anyone else wish to make any comments on 2320, House Bill 2320? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2320. Laverne, do you have those handouts I had copied before we go into the next bill? I found something in my files this morning that he's not here now. Representative Whitty had brought up, and I just wanted to pass these out this morning. At our initial overview of the workers' comp department, Representative Whitty asked somebody if the states were ever graded on workers' compensation. And it jogged my memory, and in fact, in July of 1986, the National Council on compensation insurance did in fact grade the state on the non-statutory influences on workers' compensation. And I would ask the members of the committee to take the time to read this, look at how Oregon ranks in this category. You'll see it's not good. And when we get into some of our hearings later on, part next month, on the agency and related individuals involved in workers' compensation, maybe we can reference this. Certainly, this highlights the at least one area that I wish to proceed this session as far as the non-statutory things. Basically, this relates to administration and implementation, delivery of services, those things that this body doesn't have a lot of control over. And it's a pretty good report. Of course, the credentials of the council are probably the best. So hope you can look at that. Next, we'll go into public hearing on House Bill 2348. Before we call the first witness, I wanted to make a couple comments as to why the bill is in front of us. During the interim, I'd spent a considerable amount of time trying to work with some employer associations in trying to get them some group retro insurance program, group insurance programs for purposes of workers' compensation. We ran into some big problems. It's a perception of mine and borne out perhaps by the results of those efforts that there really is in this state a lack of competition, if you will, in workers' compensation, despite what we hear all the time. In some of the discussions I've had in other parts of the country and with other insurance companies, we have a rule in Oregon called the Designated Adjuster Rule, which is perhaps one of the most conservative rules in the nation. This rule, and we've got some people here this morning that'll talk about that, makes it very difficult for new insurance companies or other insurance companies to come into Oregon. And for that reason, we identified this particular narrow technical area of the law as a problem. And perhaps if we can make some changes in that, it'll open it up the door a little bit to get some more competition in the state and I think provide some better service, frankly, and also some people that might write it a little cheaper eventually. So with that, I'll call Dave Scheer up. He's the resident expert on this issue. Is that fair, Dave? What a lead, huh? Good morning, Dave.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Dave, for the record.
For the record, I'm David Scheer. I'm employed with Fred S. James Insurance Brokers in Portland. I've been involved in workers' comp related issues for the past six sessions. And I recognize a lot of familiar faces because some of you have been involved in bills that we've been involved in but in the past. I work exclusively in workers' compensation, and I sincerely mean this, that I feel this particular bill has the potential to do or improve our system more than any bill I've been associated with in a long time. And I say this because, as Bob stated earlier, this bill addresses the key issue in workers' comp, one that's been overlooked time and time again, and that's the service component of workers' comp. If we take a look at our record with respect to what we've done legislatively and how we've tried to address the escalating costs, I don't think we scored very well and in certain areas, and particularly with respect to losses. Losses have increased since 1981 at an average compound rate of 18% per year through 1987. 18% per year. Now we've, in our business, we're both brokers and we provide services. Services to people who've elected to self-insure primarily. We really have no reason to provide self-insurance services if the industry was doing their job with respect to the management of claims. I can think back to 1976 when I started to work at Fred S. James, where we started a service company. And that was only done because we had a lot of major employers who said to us, we cannot get the level of service and the attention to our claims that's necessary for us to run a cost-effective program and to service our injured workers. And the only real alternative at the time was self-insurance. And the self-insureds, through techniques they've employed over the years, have found a way to improve that 18% per year escalation of incurred losses. The accounts we work with, and we have about 30, 35 major employers in this state that are self-insured, have historically, year in and year out, experienced loss ratios that are about half or less of the industry average. I think the success of those programs is related to in great part, to an investment in superior claims management services. As it stands now, if a carrier wants to come into Oregon, or if an existing carrier, as Bob said, would like to come to this state and really take an aggressive look at managing claims, it's an all-or-nothing situation. That is, they have to change their current policies and procedures that are frequently dictated in their home offices in Hartford, Connecticut, or they have to contract with someone to handle all their claims that's in the state of Oregon as a service company. You can't have dual service providers in this state per our administrative rules. Now, Oregon is only one of about three states we've been able to identify that has this rule. We think it's unnecessary, and we think particularly in the state of Oregon, it's really impeded competition. Now, let me give you a couple of examples of what I'm referring to when we talk about improved services. Now, I'm not here to indict insurance companies, but frankly, I think most of us would recognize that a lot of insurance companies are bureaucracies. They're sometimes slow to change. They're frequently controlled by home offices, and I can say this almost universally. Most insurance companies, but for two, are scared to death of the state of Oregon. Open rating did one thing. It drove everybody outside of Oregon, but for two carriers. And we had a temporary rate reduction, and everybody was real pleased. But as I said, year in and year out, the rates have losses have increased 18% per year. We've done nothing to address the loss situation. Say nothing. We've done little to really get to the meat of it. And the real problem, again, is services. I think that what we're proposing here is badly needed. That is, you know, it's not revolutionary. In fact, what we're talking about is so basic, it's what carriers used to do 25 years ago. When people were on time loss, they were contacted personally by a representative of the carrier. The caseloads were low. They didn't have 400 open time loss claims. You can't even get the checks out with 300 or 400 open time loss claims per examiner or supervisor. But what's happened, I think the industry as a whole has cut back on expenses, and they cut back in the claims area. That's the very area that's going to reduce the losses. And those of you who work in workers' compensation, I see Representative Mannix up there nodding, know that that's what we see year in and year out. You know, in Oregon, you know, if the overall loss ratios are up to 105, 110, 119%, the pure premium level rises. I'm suggesting that this bill will do something to get to the root of the problem, that is the losses, and that's what we have to focus on. It's a front-end investment in the work comp system that's badly needed. We have employers that come to us, or employer groups come to us and say, you know, we would like to establish a program whereby in the first 2 days of a claim, the injured worker is seen by one of your representatives. We want to have caseloads no more than 110 or 120 per examiner or supervisor, so there's time to manage the files. We want to have coordinated return to work efforts within the first week of the claim, but that takes time to manage those cases, and that's something that's unique to our system. Most carriers in most jurisdictions aren't geared up to do that. In the state of Georgia, you may not have to have that kind of a handle on cases because the benefit levels are low, it's not as big an expense item or whatever. In Oregon, you better well have that kind of a program if you're going to be cost effective. We have injured workers frequently with some of our insured clients saying, we wish the services were better. We see that frequently. You know, the injured workers themselves are saying that. We'd like to hear from the insurance companies. Again, I'm not trying to make an indictment of the industry, but I'm saying our record isn't very good. I think this bill kind of is like the high-tech business in California 25 years ago when we had venture capitalists, people with lots of money, and wanted to find a way to invest it. Insurance companies have large surpluses currently, especially have large amounts of surplus, but I think they need some technology. I think some of the service companies in the state of Oregon have discovered that technology, and it's very basic technology. And it's kind of like getting the venture capitalists together with the people who are on the research and development side to create a better product. We all have a lot to gain from that product. Bob mentioned competition. Again, two-thirds of the business in the state of Oregon is written by two carriers. I can say with certainty, we have identified several carriers that we work with nationally who would like to try the programs out we've developed on a pilot basis in Oregon. They don't want to revamp their entire system nationally, but they say, if you have a system that works in Oregon, we'd like to try it on, you know, on a pilot basis, maybe with a few employers or an association or two. But as it stands now, the law doesn't allow us to do that. It's all or nothing. They have to revamp everything and do it our way, and we have to handle all their claims, or they have to handle them all. And again, it's very unusual. We're only one of three states where that occurs. Another area I think that this would assist in is employer flexibility and control. I think employers would have a little more input than they currently have in the claims management process. Normally, now, if an employer is insured, they take off the shelf whatever the carrier gives them. Now, ironically, when it comes to the at least private sector or private carriers, we don't have a designated attorney rule where you can only use one attorney firm. You know, private carriers are free to use whatever law firms they want, but for the state fund. But we do have this regulation with respect to claim service, and I think there's a lot of similarities between defense work and claims management in that degree. Lastly, and I think we'll probably hear some concerns respects the administrative burden to the department. I frankly don't think there is an administrative burden to the department. I think that in most jurisdictions, as I said earlier, this is handled as a commonplace item. Currently, the rules allow for up to 6 adjusting locations for a single provider. Now, I don't know really what the difference is between having 6 adjusting locations for a single provider, if you will, and allowing one insurance company to have different adjusting firms handle their claims, because that's really what we're talking about. We certainly have a costly regulatory function within the work comp division today, but again, we have to devise a system that's going to get to the real underlying concern, and that's the losses. This bill will do that. It's going to assist injured workers. It's going to assist employers. And overall, I think it could do a great deal to set a standard that's badly needed for the state of Oregon with respect to the handling of claims.
Is that it, Dave?
Any questions? Yes.
Questions? Representative Edmondson.
Well, I appreciate your testimony, and I think this bill is needed, and I'm glad that we have it in front of us. You touched on some areas that go a little, some concerns that go beyond the scope of this bill. And I just wanted to follow up on one of those. You said in your testimony, you said 75% of all the business, workers' comp business, is written by SAFE or Liberty Northwest. And you mentioned the designated attorney rule, which I thought of for a moment might be what I call a preferred lawyer organization, or a PLO.
I like that, PLO.
Then I understood your testimony was a little different. So, but you did, but SAFE does have a designated attorney. It's the Attorney General.
Right.
Do you think, and maybe you just want, maybe you'll want to come back and testify more on this, that part of the problem in competition is that SAFE really operates under even different rules than Liberty Northwest does, and that we have in our three-way system three very different ways of insuring, and might competition be healthier if we were, say, one-way or two?
I'm not suggesting that. Anything but.
No, but I mean, really, there is, it isn't a level playing field in the insurance industry.
Well, I think there are some there are advantages certainly out there. I've always been a believer in competition, and I think that's one of the big problems that we have in Oregon right now. We don't have competition, really. We have limited competition. We have artificial competition in certain respects. Open rating, as I said, drove a lot of people outside of Oregon. Mm-hmm. But look at what our load factors and what the rates are now compared to 1981. What have we really done? We scared a lot of people outside of the state, I'll tell you that.
Representative Mannix.
Can I pose a couple of questions here, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Let's assume that I'm the chairman of XYZ Insurance Company, which has a big office in Portland, which tries to service the entire state, and somehow I find that that big office in Portland is doing a horrible job of processing claims. And there's a terrible load of claims per examiner, and there's a lot of delays, a lot of penalties and fees are being imposed, and so forth. Under the current system, it's an all or nothing proposition for me, isn't it? That
right.
is, if I want to try someone else out to see if they can do a better job in taking care of the either the insured's employees, or even if I'm self-insured, my own employees, I can't do that.
That's correct.
Or say I'm a small service company, I want to go to move out to Tualatin and open up an office for, with two people, and I just want a little piece of the pie for XYZ Insurance Company, and I want to give them quality service in that area. If they've got another big company doing most of it, they that other company has to do all of it. Is
correct.
That right?
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
You bet.
I hate to inform everyone, but our machine is acting up again. We do have somebody ready to swap them. This is a good time, however, for a little recess. So we'll be gone for 5 minutes.
Oh, oh. We'll reconvene the Labor Committee.
The machine doesn't work.
801 form to our transcriber.
Our next person to testify on House Bill 2348 is Mr. Young from the department. Division now. We'll call it that.
It's a division, isn't it?
We have a copy of the bill. Only next to the draft. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I'm Larry Young. I'm the manager of the compliance section of the Workers' Compensation Division. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to preface my testimony by explaining that the Workers' Compensation Division does not and did not have a good grasp of this legislation in preparing our testimony. But I would like to have my testimony go on the record and talk about some of the previous person testifies testimony. ORA 731-475, which is being amended by House Bill 2348, was adopted by the 1975 legislature at the request of the Workers' Compensation Division, at that time the Workers' Compensation Board. Accordingly, we have a more than a little interest in any proposal to amend this statute. The purpose of my testimony today is to explain why ORS 731-475 is in the statutes and to advise of the impact of the proposed amendments contained in House Bill 2348. What led to 731-475 was simply the fact that the process became totally unmanageable. Insurers had their offices all over the country, New Jersey, Chicago, Connecticut, Texas, you name it. In addition, they maintain multiple locations. If you had an inquiry of an insurer, you could call several locations before you found the one with the record. If any claim processing problem developed, such as timeliness of first payment or having claim information, it would take days to track down where the claim was being processed and get the problem resolved. It was equally difficult for workers, medical providers, and other parties involved in the system. The passage of 731-475 resolved all that. As you will note, it simply provides that if an insurer issues guaranteed contracts in Oregon, they must have a place of business in Oregon where all claims are processed and records are kept. However, in lieu of being in state, they can be represented by a service company. The statute and related rule are a time-proven necessity to the efficient administration and enforcement of the workers' compensation law. They assure all parties involved in the claims process, for example, workers, medical providers, private rehabilitation organizations, etc., can determine at any time with whom and where the claims processing responsibility lies and have immediate access thereto. This is important for non-disabling claims which become disabling, aggravation claims, and latent occupational disease claims. It also expedites resolution of claims processing problems. It also reduces the department's operating costs relative to auditing, correspondence, and general supervision of the system. Mr. Chairman, that explains why the division introduced and supports 731-475 as it currently is written. The following briefly outlines the potential impact of the proposed amendments contained in House Bill 2348. The changes on page 1, lines 15 and 16, allow the insurer, out-of-state insurer, to use an unlimited number of service companies to process its claims and keep its records, and then allows the service companies to have unlimited number of locations where they can process claims and keep records. Currently, there are 195 insurers using service companies in Oregon. If just half of these added only one service company, we would have almost another 100 locations to audit. Currently, there are 29 service companies servicing workers' compensation insurers. If they each added one additional place of business, we would have another 29 locations to audit. Besides the potential increases of operating costs, there will be additional costs associated with maintaining records of who and where these service companies are located. This is a big concern to us, but an even greater concern is considering the consequences of how many service companies there potentially could be if this language was adopted. Currently, there are no direct regulation of service companies in Oregon. Potentially, under this proposal, every employer of every insurer using service companies could become a service company processing their own claims. One point that should be made that under our administrative rules, insurers and self-insurers are allowed to maintain additional locations under certain circumstances. We are also very opposed to the proposed amendments to 656-455 on lines 28 and 29 of page 1 regarding self-insured employers. We conduct extensive audits of self-insured employers annually. This is necessary to assure adequate surety deposits and their financial stability. Currently, we have 149 self-insured employers. Additional locations other than those already authorized would cause an unmanageable workload without considerable increases in resources. That completes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to apologize for not having any alternatives. We really had difficulty trying to grasp what problem is trying to be resolved. And we would like very much to help in resolving that problem, whatever it is. Our concern is the cost of administration and being sure what you want done as a policy is actually done. I would point out on Mr. Scherer's testimony that notwithstanding the contracts that the insurance companies are letting contracts to service companies, it does not necessarily imply, as Mr. Scherer indicated, that there's going to be better claims processing as a result of those contracts being let by the insurance company. The insurance company is controlling how the claim is processed and paying for the process. If there are bad claims processors, then they can equally be just as bad as claims processors by virtue of letting a contract to a service company. Letting a contract to a service company does not ensure better claims processing. And that completes my
answer. I think that's safe to say on anything. No guarantees, as I learned. Representative Domini.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Young, one of the things you pointed out in your testimony is something that concerned me, and that dealt with staying in Oregon, or keeping headquarters in Oregon is something that you felt was very important. If we could address that in the legislature and how we put this thing together, how would you like to see that done to assure that that at least there's offices in Oregon so that we can keep some kind of a handle on it? How would you see that happening?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dominey, I'm not sure we're saying that the in-state location is critical. What we are saying is we have to know where the claims and the records are so that when we do audits, so when we want to find out how why a time loss hasn't been paid timely, why the vocation rehabilitation isn't being done, that we know immediately where the person is that's processing that claim. And as you expand that number by virtue of having an insurer have as many service companies, then keeping record of where that is and getting that information as soon as possible and the worker knowing who is processing his claim is what's important. And as you expand that, the number of service companies, then you have more information to maintain and more records to be kept as far as where they're at. And it's just very expensive for the system.
As a follow-up.
Go ahead, Sam.
If the employer were required to keep